We're talking about breasts, cannabis, improv theater, and mental health. Sherry Glaser is many things, an activist, actress, writer, artist, and grandmother. She's the reason women are allowed to be topless in California. She's got a new one-woman show and a new book. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and we're talking about what ties all these things together on Through the Eyes of Women, right here and now on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Sherry Glaser has a new one-woman show called Taking the High Road, Comic Confessions from Behind the Cannabis Curtain, and a new book, The First Practical Handbook for Crazy People, Making the Best of Mental Illness, and a long, colorful career that we're barely going to scratch the surface of today. Hello, Sherry. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Thanks for having me.
Really excited to be talking to you, Sherry. You've done a lot of interesting things. I hope we can discuss many of them today. A lot of your life's work seems to revolve around hot-button issues. Is that a choice?
You know, I do find myself attracted to controversy. I think it has something to do with my Gemini nature and my Scorpio moon. And I find myself trying to pull back the curtain and reveal the truth of things. And when I do that, I find more connection in the world.
Well, how does that start? Do you remember your entry into activism?
It started pretty early. My mom was unusual in the sense that she was a manic depressive and she had delusions, and she thought she was Mary, the Virgin Mary. And so my life began trying to sort things out, like what is happening to me? So I had to really learn about navigation through this mysterious life I was given, what was real, what wasn't real. So I started paying attention at a very early age. I also had a lot of comedy in my life, whether it be watching my mother's antics or the early television I Love Lucy and the Dick Van Dyke Show. So that also influenced me. It woke something up in me that I had to deconstruct things and figure them out and explain them in different ways. So I began writing very young. And I think that was my first activism, was trying to figure it out and explain it to others.
So this is how art and activism began to combine very early in your life.
Yeah. I had a best friend named Heidi Ashkenazi growing up in Long Island, and we were on the prowl for injustice. There was a garbage dump in Oceanside, Long Island, and the garbage dump was getting higher than any other feature in Long Island. So she and I decided to take on the sanitation department and demonstrate. So we wrote a parody of the song with a little help from my friends all about the garbage dump, and we went and sang it for the sanitation engineers, and that was my first real confrontation with what I thought was injustice, and it was theatrical, and it was funny. And I think the best way to bring about change is through humor and creativity. It really does make a bridge, because even though you're making a point and trying to confront something, you're entertaining at the same time, and I still adhere to that these many, many years later.
So what was the response that you got when you sang that song?
They responded to us very positively and said, you know, you have a point. Dump is getting higher and higher. And it wasn't immediate response or remediation, but they did eventually cover it up and make it a park. I don't know if that's a good thing, but they were charmed. I mean, we were 10 years old and we were adorable. We made them laugh. I think that has been true about my work. It gets stuck in people's head in a good way. Like my show Family Secrets, I did, oh my gosh, 25 years ago. And people still quote it to me because it was delivered with such, I think, sincerity and that kind of confessional way that really does kind of tap on our universal truth. You know, they say the more personal you get, the more universal it is. We have so much in common, and we spend a lot of time trying to be special and individual, and I think when you tap into that common ground, there's an impact.
So now, all these years later, you've just debuted a new one-woman show, Taking the High Road, Comic Confessions from Behind the Cannabis Curtain. Would you like to tell us what that is?
Well, that, again, the CC, the confessional nature of it, you know, the secret telling. I opened the first medical cannabis dispensary in the village of Mendocino back in 2011 with my family, and there was all kinds of danger in doing that.
Literal danger.
Literal danger. Even though it was legal in California and we had Obama in the White House, we felt it was safe enough that we could take the risk and come out of the closet, cannabis closet, and have a dispensary. But the laws are still gray, and so it was more than risky.
And this is Mendocino, a town. Is the population still barely over 1,000, or has it grown some?
Yeah, it's about 1,500 now. It's a small town. It's a picturesque village right on the edge of the Pacific. Lovely, lovely place. And it is in the heart of the Emerald Triangle. We had to go through quite a bit even to open the shop and get a leaf on our shingle, a cannabis leaf. We had to go to the historical review board, and it was a very big deal. But nonetheless, you know, we opened, and we were really kind of pushing the envelope. Even though we were caring for over 3,000 patients after, you know, a few years. And our shop was super tiny. It was like 800 square feet, you know, really, really small and modest. And we had just beautiful medicine, whether it was the flowers, tinctures, edibles, and something called Phoenix Tears, known for helping heal cancer. And we also had raw juice, the big leaf of the plant. Not too many people know about its medicinal properties. When you juice it and drink it raw, it is incredible medicine for inflammatory diseases. The thing about it, the great thing, is you don't get high. It's just a raw cannabis, and you get the properties of the medicine without the psychedelic components, and so it's safe for elders, children. We featured all of these things, and in 2014, there was an incident where I was trying to help a little boy, 6 years old, who had medulloblastoma, aggressive brain cancer, and his family came to us as a last resort. They could only visit us for 10 days because she had other children back home in Houston, and I tried to send the juice. I didn't think it was a big deal because it's raw, non-narcotic, and I just wanted to save his life. So I tried to send it, and it was confiscated in Ukiah. The agency, the police who picked it up, decided to make a report to the district attorney, who then began an investigation into our cooperative and ended up raiding us in March of 2014.
Sherry, this was a completely legal operation, right? And it hadn't left the state of California at the time, and it was the police who came for you?
Yeah, and there isn't a clear law. When you say it was completely legit, as far as we knew, even today we don't know what's completely legit in California. It's still very confusing. But they felt it was enough for them to go undercover and come into our shop, and it was a sting. And they felt they had enough evidence to raid us, take everything, all of our medicine, throw us in jail. And they scared the hell out of us, too. It was very traumatic. You know, we got out the next day on bail and came home to try and put our lives together, which we did, and reopened the shop 3 weeks later. But I was extremely traumatized. So Mommy had some PTSD. As a reaction to my trauma, I wrote comedy. That's what I do. I have a life, and I go through tragedy or struggle, and then I turn it into comedy. So I wrote this show, Taking the High Road, about how I survived that trauma and went on to success and healing. That's my job.
Sounds like a pretty big job, Sherry.
It's a big job. And I'm telling the universe I have quite enough material now. I'm good.
You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brecon, and we're speaking with writer, activist, actress, and grandmother Sherry Glaser about her latest show, Taking the High Road, and her latest book, the first practical handbook for crazy people, Making the Best of Mental Illness. Before we get into your new book, Sherry, can you tell us real quick, what is Breast Not Bombs?
Breast Not Bombs was born on the 4th of July in 2005, when a friend of mine was at a celebration here in Mendocino, Friendship Park, where she was in the park on a beautiful summer day, and everybody was dancing, having a great time, and it was very warm, and she took off her shirt, and she was detained by the police, and she came and got me. So she felt like she was being discriminated against because all the men had their tops off, and she didn't understand what the difference was, especially because there were some heavy men there, too, with bigger breasts than she had. So that kind of inspired me to, of course, stand up for injustice and find out if, in fact, it was indecent exposure for women to have their top off. And we found out that breasts are not genitalia. And so we thought we would push the envelope, of course, and make it an issue about soft tissue. So we birthed this group, Breasts Not Bombs, Mammaries Not Missiles, Nipples Not Napalm. And we decided to use the breasts as a symbol of what is decent, what is loving, kind, and human, and the source of life, you know, and compare it to what is truly indecent, like war and racism and rape and lying to the American public if you're a political official. So it began this whole active demonstration, and we took it all over. We took it to Union Square on Black Friday. We took it to the White House when George Bush was president, and again when Obama was president, and the Capitol in Sacramento when Arnold Schwarzenegger was having his special election. And that's where we got arrested for indecent exposure. And again, went to jail. I've been there a couple times. And but in that case, we sued the CHP for arresting us in violation of our freedom of speech. And we won.
Our breast speech?
Yes. In their political speech. So that's where I made precedent to establish that bearing one's breasts in political protest is free speech.
Mm-hmm. And is Breast Not Bombs still in progress? Is this still a continuing project?
I haven't done it, but I've seen it spread, like Femin. I don't know if you're familiar with them in Europe. They've done it at the Vatican, and they done it at churches in France. I've gotten emails from women around the world who have used the tactic, and you know, they're like, how did you get out of it? What did you do? And the Chevron grandmothers were really the first ones that I know. They were protesting what was going on with oil pipelines down in Nigeria, and they used their bodies, their topless bodies, to shame the men. And to say, we are your mothers, you know, how can you do this to us and the earth? And that's really what I think we're all representing. And then the last one I saw was in Spain. They had erected a statue of our new president, Mr. Trump, and it was a wax figure. And she infiltrated the exhibit at the museum, and she was topless, and she was running around, and she would grab his crotch. She ran up to him and grabbed his crotch. And
Sherry, is this what you were talking about when you alluded to breast knot bullies?
Yeah, it's sort of evolving because, again, the nature of the bosom is nurturing and kindness and comfort and taking care of the children. So I thought I could evolve this into breast knot bullies, but I haven't really gathered the kind of coalition that I am going to need in order to pull this one off.
Well, in a completely unrelated topic from gathering your coalition, Sherry, let's talk about your new book. Let's talk about what is probably going to be very handy for a lot of people, probably under a lot of people's Christmas trees, the first practical handbook for crazy people. How did it come about?
My mother, as I said, you know, she struggled with mental illness throughout her life. And she tried so many different modalities to heal, from shock treatment to tarot cards. She tried everything without judgment. My mother was, I think, very enlightened in ways. When she wasn't crazy, it was that fine line of madness and genius. And so in her later years, she wrote a manuscript to talk about how to get through and heal and have a good life in spite of being diagnosed with some kind of mental illness. It was her last wish that I publish it. It was kind of her, you know, her determination to finish this manuscript before she died, and she did finish it. So she passed away in 2010, and I went into some heavy-duty grief on that. I mean, I was very close with my mom. And so a couple of years ago, I pulled out the manuscript, and I thought, this is valuable. And it also includes a questionnaire, a who are you, what do you want, why are you here type of questionnaire that is very helpful when one is starting to spin out in terms of mental stress. You know, what am I doing here? Why am I here? How am I going to make it through? What's the purpose in life? So the combination really inspired me, and I realized I had my own contribution of how I deal with my own insanity, quote unquote.
I was going to say, Sherry, what definition of the word crazy are we using for the purposes of this book?
You see, that's the thing. The definition is so broad. You know, some people are just really sad. They call it depression. Or some people are just very angry and they're given a diagnosis. And some are so scared. Or you tangle those up, scared and angry, and you get yourself into a loop in your mind and you tell the same story over and over. And
well, what's wrong with us, Sherry? It sounds like there's got to be a common thread between all those people's problems.
I think it has to do with not understanding emotion, how to deal with big emotions that we're born with, and having a safe place to express them. And so you mix up all those emotions with difficult circumstances, and who doesn't have that? And you've got no template, you've got no map to just calm it down and have some relief. I think everybody is looking for relief from pain, emotional and physical pain. And so we end up running to the doctor, and the doctor gives you a pill, and the pill gives you side effects and sometimes makes it worse. I mean, when you hear those advertisements on television of the side effects, you know, you could die from one of those pills. So my mom, she had other ways that made her feel better. Instead of fixing it, she found tools. And so did I. And comedy is one of my, like, my first show was Family Secrets. I had to play my entire family and act it out. And it was a form of therapy. And kept me sane. So this book is a combination, which makes it very rare, of my mother's original writing and my writing. So it's a mother-daughter exploration of mental health.
And it sounds like your mom did have some tools, because otherwise she would be writing a book persuading us that she is in fact the Virgin Mary and not a book helping people hold on to their reality.
Yeah, she had some great tools. And I think, again, that line between madness and genius is very thin. And if you have love, which she did, my father was just an extraordinary man, husband and father. She was touched by some kind of wisdom beyond what is common. And she was in touch with the other side, with angels, with voices that actually helped her a lot. And when we start to recognize that and respect her point of view and give her the support she needed, she was able to be very creative and have a very successful, happy, loving life, even though she was crazy. And she used lithium. That was one of her allies. You know, it really did help her. But in the end, it degraded her kidneys, and she ended up on dialysis. There was never another medication that really helped her out. We did try cannabis in the end, and that did make her smile. But she was so worried about going to jail that she decided to have another round of shock treatment. Even in 2008, that didn't really help much either. So at that point, she just decided to let it all go and get the heck out of Dodge. And she refused treatment and then ended up having a lovely, beautiful, incredible exit, a death that was quite remarkable. My mother deserves her own, like, I think, a whole book about her life. And this is kind of touching it in a manuscript form, because people's attention spans, you know, it's just a short little book that'll help you. Like, you can turn to a page and find an exercise that will relieve your stress and pain.
As we are approaching the end of our time together, Sherry, you'd said that an underlying theme, the unifying theme in all of these various works of yours, your one-woman shows, your writing, your performances, is the feminine. Did you want to explain to us how that fits in?
I see the world in a lot of pain and cruelty and destruction. And I think it's because the masculine, some people call it the patriarchy, has all the power. Not all of it, but a majority. And it doesn't necessarily mean the men have more power or the women. It's that it's the nature, the feminine nature of creativity, of birth, of loving kindness. Again, back to the breasts. I mean, this has been going on for 5,000 years, since the Bronze Age, so nothing new. But I would like to see women and children first. I think that restoring that balance to this world would be a real, be such a nice feeling, where that is our concern. Because when women and children are safe, everybody is. And we're dealing with such a crisis, a global crisis in security, in well-being, that to refocus on how important the mother is. In fact, you know, she brings life, and that's true in humanity and in the planet. We think of Mother Earth because she feeds us and she houses us, and the womb of the ocean, all of that is sick, and it's a real serious situation for all of us. And we're all children. We're all born from a mother. That's how we get here. And we seem to have forgotten that. We all come from the mother. That is like the simplest way in my mind to restore some kind of order and balance here. And that's also where the cannabis comes in, the feminine plant. It's the female of the cannabis plant that gives us the medicine and the healing properties. So across the board, I have this vision of the mother. And that brings me to the show, Oh My Goddess, that I do, which I embody the great Jewish mother of us all, Ma, who wakes up after 5,000 years of a nap and reads God's book. And she's hurt because he doesn't even mention her name. And she goes on to tell her side of creation and the story. And I think that not only is it necessary for us to survive and thrive in this world, but it's very comforting. And I do believe we could all use a little comfort right now.
Sherry, I am loving talking to you. I wish we could keep talking. I knew we weren't going to get a chance to touch on all the things I wanted to touch on with you, but I want to take that note you gave us about women and children first. I'm going to carry that with me for the rest of the day. I don't know about anybody else, but why not? And I want to thank you ever so much, Sherry, for joining us today on Through the Eyes of Women.
You're so welcome. What a pleasure. That was fun.
Great. Well, have a great one.
You too.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Brecon, and I've been speaking with activist, writer, and actress Sherry Glaser. For more information, visit sherryglaser.net. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Jesse Eden, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here at KHSU.